begin by telling a couple of stories about the Buddha. When the Buddha was a young person, about your age, he was out playing in the yard one day, and he found a swan that had an arrow through its wing. And he took the swan, and he could see that the swan was in a lot of pain. And so he took the swan, and he took it back to his room, and he took the arrow out of its wing, and he cleaned the wound, and he fed and gave water to the swan and took good care of it. And bit by bit, the swan started to get strong and stand. And you know how beautiful swans are, with that sense of those long, majestic necks. And then one day, his cousin came into his room and said, "That's my swan." And he said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I've been learning how to shoot arrows. And I was out hunting, and I shot a swan. And then it fell to the ground, and I couldn't find it anywhere, but I could see that swan has an injured wing. That's my swan." And the Buddha said, "Well, I found this swan in the garden injured, and I took care of it, and I helped heal its wounds, and now it's getting healthy again. And I don't think the swan is your swan." And his cousin said, "Well, I want that swan. I was the one that shot it. I want that swan back." And so the Buddha said, "Well, let's go talk to the king. Let's go ask the king what he would do. What would be the decision? Who the swan really belongs to?" And it turns out the king of that area was a very wise person. And when he heard what the Buddha had to say, his name was Siddhartha when he was a little boy, and he heard what his cousin had to say, he said, "Well, the swan belongs to the one who takes care of it. The swan belongs to the one who saved its life." And it was very clear that that was the Buddha. And we can learn something from that, because when we take good care of something, then that's what belongs to us. That's what is part of us. So if you think about, if you have a special place, do you have a really special place in your life that you go to? And when you go to that place, you feel really safe, really good, really happy, and you take very good care of that space. You maybe decorate it with some of your best drawings. Do you have a place like that?
I do.
You have a place like that? Okay. No. Do you have a special tree anywhere in your yard that you like to go sit in?
I do.
Do you? No? Do you have a special person that you like to go sit next to when you feel upset?
I do.
No? You have something? Do you have a special thing you like to do when you... What's that? Find that if we have places where we can take really good care of ourselves, we come home to ourselves. Do you know how you can get really distracted and you're thinking, "Oh, I've got to do all of this," or maybe when we're with a group of friends and it's like, how do I make friends with this person? How do I make friends with that person? And if we come back to ourselves and restore ourselves, maybe come back with a breath, but maybe it's come back with an idea. Maybe we think about the favorite place we have, or a favorite person we have, or a favorite thing we like to do. And we come back to ourselves in that way. We kind of befriend ourselves. We take good care of ourselves. Do you know that? Do you know how to do that? Do you ever find a way to do that? That when you find yourself really worried about something, there's some way for you to come back to yourself where you can touch some peace and some ease. Maybe it's through having a special place to go to that you take good care of. Have you ever thought of making a safe place for yourself so that you have a place to go to? Sometimes we can just think it in our minds. We know that there's something that makes us feel really happy inside. Might be we think of the person that we love the best. Maybe our mother. Maybe our father. Maybe our best friend. And we think about them and we feel a lot better. It's like we can take refuge in knowing that person. That's why it's good to have more than one place of refuge, isn't it? Well, more than one place we can go to feel at peace, to feel okay. Yeah, we have a sense that you know, if we make everything, we do everything right outside of ourselves, you know, like we get good grades, we do everything our mom and dad ask us to do. And we're really good kids that you know, everything will be okay. And truly that helps a lot. But there's also knowing how to come back to ourselves, to take good care of ourselves, to befriend ourselves, so that when things do go wrong, we have a place to come inside of ourselves where we can touch some peace and touch some happiness. There's a song I want to teach, and it's called Coming Back to the Island of Self. And the song comes from another story about the Buddha. When the Buddha was very sick, and he had many, many people around him, and everyone was really worried about him because they were afraid he was dying. And he had a lot of people around him because he had been a person that was able to show people how to love themselves, and how to feel love and peace in the world and create that in the world. So lots of people wanted to be with him. So when he was really sick, one of his foremost followers came up to him and said, "What are we going to do when you're gone, Buddha? What will we do?" And the Buddha said, "Take refuge in yourself. Take refuge in yourself. Be a light unto yourself." And so that became one of the Buddha's last teachings, and it's something for us to ponder, how we find a place and in our own being, in our own lives, where we feel safe and protected, and where we can touch our own goodness in our own life, not be lost in unhappiness or worry or fear or feeling alone. So the song goes, "I'm coming back to myself. I take refuge in the island of self. And in the island of self, I find beautiful trees, clear waters, sunshine, fresh air." And all of those things are available all the time, aren't they? Like if we're upset about something, if we have a favorite tree that we can go sit under, and that tree is really strong, and we lean our back up against it, and we feel the energy of the tree just supporting us, just taking care of us, breathing for us, offering shelter to us. And we can feel happy and at peace. But also sometimes when we feel the sun on our cheeks, and we really stop and we feel the sun, and it feels so good, and our arms feel warm from the sunshine. And even if our mind is thinking about, oh, my friend said this and it hurt me, but if we come back to the island of self, and we feel the sun on our cheek and on our back and on our arms, and it feels so good, and we know a little bit then, oh, even though maybe our friend said something bad, we still have the sun, we still have that refuge. We can always come back to having the island in ourselves. And so one of the important things that the Buddha taught for all of us was to find places where we could touch inside of ourselves, to know peace, to know ease, to know safety and protection, to feel okay, to know love. And so it's something to look at and to think about. And maybe when you're having a Dharma discussion, the young people are having Dharma discussion up at the field house, maybe that's something to talk about. How is it that in this world where so many things are asked of us and where so many things we're trying to do just right, how is it we can come back to ourselves and find a safe place, a place of protection within our own being, within our own lives, and how we can create that for ourselves. And then, you know, that beautiful swan that Siddhartha found that was wounded, that swan can be ourselves. We can have that same beauty and nobility as a swan by taking good care of ourselves, good care of the things that hurt us, so that we feel whole and safe and protected. And then our real beauty can shine in the world. So, let me teach the song. Breathing in, I go back to the island within myself. Breathing in, I go back to the island within myself. The next line. There are beautiful trees within the island. There are beautiful trees within the island. Sing the whole thing through. Should we sing a little higher?
Yeah.
There's one more line.
There's another line. I forgot. What's the next line? I forgot.
I enjoy going back to my island.
Okay, good. Thank you. Let's put the whole thing together now. A little bit higher. Breathing in, I go back to the island. Discover that island for yourself where there is a beautiful stream and there are fresh breezes and there is a tree, a place for you to take refuge amidst all the demands that I know you have in your life, all the things that are being asked of you, and all the ways that you are really contributing in your family and at your school and with your friends. So if you would like to stand up and face the Sangha. Bow to the Sangha. Go have some fresh air. Enjoy some fresh air. Everybody want to move forward? you can stretch your legs that way too if you want. You can stand up, stretch your legs, and move forward.
There's lots of empty spaces we could fill in.
Dear friends, one of the most important teachings of the Buddha was the teaching of refuge, knowing how to take refuge. In the sutra that we'll be taking up during our 7-week practice period, the sutra on the white-clad disciple, he offers 4 contemplations. And those 4 contemplations I will read to you. And this is the practice and the study we'll be taking up in our first week of our practice period. So the Buddha was talking with Shariputra in this discourse, and he says, Shariputra, how do lay students of the Buddha attain the 4 contemplations and abide happily in the present moment, with ease and without hardship? They practice being aware of the Buddha, meditating on the one who has come from suchness and returns to suchness, as the one who is truly and fully awakened without any attachments, as one whose understanding and practice are perfect, as one who knows and fully understands the world, as one who has tamed what needs to be tamed, as a teacher of humans and gods, as an awakened one, and as the world-wandered one. When they meditate in this way, all unwholesome desires come to an end, and impure, sorrowful, and anxious elements no longer arise in their hearts. As a result of contemplating the Buddha, their thoughts are clear, they feel joy, and they arrive at the first of the 4 contemplations, abiding happily in the present moment with ease and without any hardships. So this is the first of the 4 contemplations, and it is to contemplate the Buddha. And contemplating the Buddha initially is about learning about the historical Buddha and knowing about what he taught as a way of practice. And seeing an exemplary life, something that we can aspire to. Knowing that in this world there was a person who aspired to ending sorrow. Knowing how to respond to suffering in a way that heals, that brings peace and joy and happiness. And initially that's like an ideal, and it's something outside of ourselves and something maybe we aspire to, something we can think about. But we don't not know how to find that ideal in our lives. And so in contemplating what the Buddha taught, we can begin to see, well, there is a path, there's something, a way that we can begin to touch this for ourselves. It's called the Dharma. And when we begin practicing, it's like taking refuge in the Dharma. We take refuge in the way that the Buddha taught. And again, it's still something that's somewhat external. We know that we come back to the present moment. And when we come back to the present moment, we greet whatever we find. And we stay always coming back to the present moment. When we greet what we find, then we let it go and come back. And we practice that over and over again, moment by moment. And sometimes it's hard to remember to do that. Like if we, you know, take a break, you know, from our meditation and we stand up and we're thinking about, oh, I need to be getting in line to go to the bathroom. And we're already, our minds are outside of the meditation hall. And we're thinking about what we need to do next. And to follow the Buddha's teaching, to follow the path of the Dharma, to take refuge in those teachings, it is simply to come back to our breath, to our body, and we stand up. And we're not thinking about the line to the bathroom. We're not thinking about walking outside for fresh air. But we're only taking this step, right, in this moment. Thay Thich Nhat Hanh says we arrive completely at this step. We're not looking past that. And it helps then to come back to our breath, and we do. We feel the earth, the floor, the ground beneath our feet. And we are completely there in our body and in our breath. And when we are completely present like that, we feel light and easy. How wonderful it is to be breathing, to be alive, to be in my body. And it's very natural to smile. We take refuge in this present moment. And we can say we are taking refuge in our own ability to wake up, our own awakening. And you know, the word Buddha means to wake up. Buddha is the awakened mind. And when we come back and we have full sovereignty over ourselves, then we are awake in this moment. We're not lost in where we're going, and we're not worried about where we've come from. Practicing like this, our hearts become light and easy, and it's very natural and easy to smile. It's good to be here. So initially we set the intention of touching that as an ideal in our lives, touching the ideal of being in the present moment, waking up to what's right here, not missing out in any of the moments of our life. And then we need to practice to remember that intention. Because inevitably, we do get lost in distraction, and we do get lost in our busyness, our projects, our worries, our fears, our grasping. And so when we study this, what I read to you about taking refuge in the Buddha, it's like touching that place where we want to know more than we know already. We want to live in a more free way than we live right now. And it's very helpful to know that inside of ourselves, to be able to touch that. Because then when we're in a really difficult situation, when somebody said something that really has hurt our feelings, and the whole internal uproar is, well, I don't like that person, I don't want to be around them, I want to get away from this, or what did I do wrong, I'm not good enough. The whole uproar that comes out of the things that hurt us, which happen all the time. Instead of getting caught there, we remember that deeper intention. How do I touch in here the mind of awakening? How do I take refuge in this moment, in the place of peace, in the place of love? And in simply being able to ask that question, our mind already has found some peace. We've already found some ease. We've already redirected our mind to that deeper, truer place that we know is a place of safety and protection. We come back to the island of self. And we take refuge there. And sometimes taking refuge is simply a question, you know, how do I hold this? Sometimes we are able to say, how do I touch peace here? And we might find that the whole mental uproar starts all over again, like, well, why do I want to have peace here? Because they did this and blah, 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 blah. But we come back to ourselves again. Because we know that that mental uproar isn't the truest thing. And that there is a place of refuge in that. And there was a many years when I was working as a biologist and I'd be out in the field. And I worked up in the Arctic for 5 years, and often I'd be out in at a study site, and a big wind would come up, a big storm would arise, and my papers would be blowing everywhere, and I'd get really cold, and I'd feel really distracted, and it's like, oh, I need refuge. I need a place of refuge. And if I went back to camp and I closed the doors and I closed the windows and I lit a lamp and I organized all my papers again, and then I could feel at peace. I wasn't being blown around anymore. I wasn't lost. And sometimes it's like that inside of ourselves too, where we are being blown around by all our thinking, all our worries, all our concerns. We're running after trying to get this project finished. And we notice if we stop, and as soon as we notice, that's already mindfulness. We notice that we are being driven kind of crazy. Then it's like we go back to the island within ourselves. We go back to our cabin where we know it's safe and secure, and we close the windows, we close the door, we come back to our breath. And The wind may be still roaring around outside of ourselves, but we found a place to touch inside of ourselves where we feel safe and protected. It might be in our intention to touch the Buddha within. We might actually say, I give this over to the Buddha. It's too much for me. And then we sit just quiet, just held by the arms of the Buddha. How wonderful that is. When we don't know what to do or how to respond in a situation of suffering, to just rest in the lap of the Buddha. And touch that stillness within until the Buddha within ourselves speaks and tells us how to respond. And we know how to respond. That island of refuge, that quiet cabin of refuge, is always available to us. It lives within us. And when we touch that place of refuge, we are touching our own Buddha nature, which does live in each moment. And when we are lost and distracted and being blown around by the winds of suffering, we might lose touch with the fact that we are of Buddha nature. We are of the nature to wake up. And then we simply need to remember that, to come back, and to know that we're not separate from that nature, that true nature. Touching our Buddha nature, we feel safe. We know that the peace and the love that are our foundation is stronger, more strong than any distress or hatred. And we are in that place unshakable because we are not alone. The great nature of awakening of all beings is there with us. The second of the four contemplations that was offered in the sutra is to take refuge in the Dharma. And it goes like this. Shariputra, the lay students of the Buddha, practice being aware of the Dharma, meditating as follows. The Dharma is taught by the Lord Buddha with great skill. It can lead to complete liberation. It can lead to a state of no afflictions. It is cool and refreshing. Its value is timeless. When lay students of the Buddha meditate on and observe the Dharma in this way, all unwholesome desires come to an end, and impure, sorrowful, or anxious elements no longer arise in their hearts. As a result of contemplating the Dharma, their thoughts are clear, they feel joy, and they arrive at the second of the four contemplations, abiding happily in the present moment with ease and without any hardship. So this is very much the basis of our practice. It is the teachings of mindfulness that leads to concentration and insight. When we are truly mindful, we are able to touch that lightness, that ease, and to offer that to whatever the situation is we find ourselves in. It's like having stepping stones.
If you've ever walked across a little stream, and you know there's just certain places where you can step, and as long as you step on those stones, yeah, your feet won't get wet, and you won't slip and fall into the water. Our practice of mindfulness is very much like having stepping stones. And when we come back to our breath, and we breathe in and breathe out, it's like we have a stone that's solid we can step on. And then if we can remember to smile, it's like there's another stone there to step on. And if we can remember to continue stepping mindfully on each stone with our full presence, knowing that if we aren't fully present, there's danger on either side in the rushing stream, we find that we can cross the stream very happily, very easily. And all the rushing waters and the spray from the stream can't hurt us. The Dharma in this way is like refuge. And when we truly practice what is taught in these four contemplations, we contemplate them, we meditate upon them, we bring them inside ourselves, and begin to see how they live within us, then we truly do have a place of refuge. When there is a storm, when the rivers are rough, and we are at risk of being swept away. And this way, the Dharma doesn't become just the words of somebody else, but it becomes a living Dharma. It becomes something that we embody and manifest. The third contemplation that the Buddha offers us in this sutra is the contemplation on the Sangha. Shariputra, the lay students of the Buddha practice being aware of the Sangha and meditating as follows. The noble community of the Tathagata is advancing in a good direction. It is on an upright path. It is oriented toward the Dharma. It lives the teachings in the way that are meant to be lived, that they are meant to be lived. The noble community of the Tathagata has successfully realized the practice of the precepts, Shila, the practice of concentration, Samadhi, and the practice of insight, Prajna. It has liberation and liberated vision. It is worthy of respect, honor, service, and offerings. It is a beautiful field of merit for everyone. As a result of contemplating the Sangha, their thoughts are clear, they feel joy, and they arrive at the third of the four contemplations, abiding happily in the present moment, with ease and without any hardship. Of course, we are the Sangha. So we don't need to look very far to find how to take refuge in the Sangha. Certainly today, coming together, practicing well for ourselves, we are also practicing well for each other. Coming back to take steps in mindfulness, to touch ease and peace, we have that then to offer to each other. And it is a place of refuge in a world of harried overcommitments and demands of never being enough or having enough. to come to the Sangha where everything is full and complete and things and each of us just as we are is perfect, is a great place of refuge. And we come together to realize that in ourselves and in our community. We come together to find the strength that, of our practice to touch the place of peace and joy within our own hearts and to manifest it as love in the world. Sometimes when we've had a really hard day and we come to Sangha on Monday night or Thursday morning, Thursday night, and our hearts are overburdened with the demands and the uncomfortableness of things in our life, and we come to Sangha and we can just take a quiet refuge there. If we come to Sangha and we feel like, oh, we have to be out there all the time, we have to communicate with everyone, we have to... Sometimes Sangha becomes like another burden, another thing we have to do. We have to try to be a certain way. But when we come to Sangha and we come... resting in our breath, and we feel the real support, the real love that is here among us, we don't have to do anything special. We don't have to try to make it be a certain way. And when we take refuge like that, it's just natural for us to look at each other and smile, for it to be okay just as it is, and for us to be okay just as we are. And in that, a lot of the overburdened heart can be put at rest. Because we don't want to make our Sangha into another burden in our life. It is a place we come to touch peace, to remind ourselves of what we're really about, to touch a place of refuge. And when we practice well in Sangha, then when we leave Sangha, we carry that strength of knowing the heart of peace and love. And sometimes we carry it out for a few steps, but sometimes we carry it into our work the next day. And sometimes we carry it for a whole week. It sustains us for the whole week until we come back together and once more take refuge together. Take refuge in knowing that everyone here is here for the same reason, and that is to touch the mind of awakening, which is the mind of joy, peace, and love. And to touch it not only just for ourselves, but to touch it for our families, for our society, to be an antidote in the world of fear and violence, and not to be swept away and overwhelmed by the fear and violence. As members of a Sangha, we make the commitment to organize our lives in such a way that we don't become overwhelmed by the the craziness of too much to do, too much to own, too much to take care of, that we continually are letting go a little so that we can find some real simplicity in our minds and in our hearts. And in touching that, that begins to manifest more and more just through how we live our lives. We can't do this without a Sangha, without a community that is committed to living in a life, living a way of non-harming in the world, of living, taking steps that are in peace for ourselves but for everyone. We don't have a place to come home to remember what is really important, what it really is our life is about, we will forget and we will be swept away. So it's important that we have our community. And that is the third of the four contemplations that the Buddha proposes in the Sutra on the White-Clad Disciple. And it is important for us to take up that as a contemplation. How am I nourished by the mind of awakening, waking up in each moment to be completely present? How do I take refuge in the teachings of the present moment of awakening? Of peace, of joy. And how do I truly live and take refuge in the Sangha? When we take refuge in the Sangha, truly, then we are supporting the Sangha. There is no separation, you know, between giving and taking. When we are completely present and we are breathing in and breathing out and touching the earth with each footstep and seeing our friends and feeling the support of our friends, then we are truly taking refuge in the Sangha, and that very practice supports everyone around us. It is the physical manifestation of the teachings, the embodied practice, and we find it right here. We don't have to look any further. It's right now, in this place. And it is the place where transformation takes place because we have this refuge, this safe refuge that reminds us over and over again of our practice. And bit by bit we see that the thoughts of separation, of overwhelm, that as we have a place of refuge and we let go of them, they have a lot less power in our lives. Some point that suffering is transformed and we really truly do see the light of the Buddha, light nature that is our own nature that we've never been separate from, and we can always manifest that. So we turn towards the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha for support, for refuge, for safety. And we find that the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha are already there within us, offering us of safety, protection, and refuge. So this week, look at this in your own life. Look at how taking refuge when your mind is distracted, when your heart is disturbed, how you can take refuge. How that manifests in your life. You know, of course, all these words I'm speaking are metaphors. And they only become living truths when you find how they actually live in your life, how you are able to actualize and realize refuge for yourself. And the first step is always to recognize when we are in a place of suffering. And it might be anxiety, it might be sadness, it might be being overwhelmed, it might be just being fed up. But when we notice those difficult things arising in ourselves that we want to get away from, the first step is in recognizing them, and then in recognizing them, to take ourselves in hand. Breathe in and breathe out. And ask ourselves, how do I touch peace here? Where is my solace? How do I take good care of myself in this suffering so that I can let it go to be light and easy? And you might want to read through the sutra on the white-clad disciple and see how that metaphor, what it means to you, what it means inside, and how you might actually practice it. So the fourth of contemplation that the Buddha speaks about in this sutra, and this is the fourth practice of the week, is goes like this. Shariputra, the lay students of the Buddha practice being mindful of the precepts, meditating as follows. The precepts have no drawbacks, flaws, impurities, or unsound points, and they help us abide in the land of the Tathagata. The precepts are not of the nature to deceive. They are always praised, accepted, practiced, and guarded by the holy ones. As a result of contemplating these trainings, the students' thoughts are clear. They feel joy, and they arrive at the fourth of the four contemplations, abiding happily in the present moment, with ease and without any hardship. In the Sutra on Knowing a Better Way to Live Alone, the Buddha speaks about how to live in the present moment without being swept away by the present moment. We all know pretty much we can identify how we get lost in the past and how we chase after the future when we're paying attention to what's coming up in our minds and our feelings. We can see, oh, this is of the past or of the future. But how is it we don't get swept away by the present moment? And the Buddha says in that sutra on knowing the better way to live alone that to learn and study the teachings of the awakened one, to understand and practice the Dharma, to cherish and take refuge in the Sangha, to understand the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and not to get caught in our self-identity, not to get caught in thinking, these eyes are myself, I am limited by these eyes, this body is myself, I am limited by this body. and so on. These thoughts are myself, I am limited by these thoughts. These perceptions are myself, I am limited by these perceptions. We tend to think that whatever we're thinking is the reality. It is everything. And we identify completely with the story, with the thoughts, as true. And what the Buddha is asking us to do here is not to let ourselves be caught just by that self-identification of our thoughts is everything. Our thoughts are the truth. Our feelings are everything. Our feeling is the truth. Our body is everything. Our body is the truth. Not to be limited by that as the only truth, but to step into something that is much bigger than that. And it means coming back to our breath. And when we come back and we breathe in and we breathe out, when we are truly looking, we see that we only have our breath because trees, grasses, algae are also here. Without them, we could not be here. Their breath is our breath, and we're not limited by this body. When we come back and we take refuge, when we notice that we're caught in a thought pattern that is suffering, that is telling a story over and over again about something, and our hearts feel overburdened and worried and upset. And when we come back and we think, that's not all there is, and we take refuge in our breath, in steps of mindfulness, we take refuge in seeing a beautiful flower blooming, we take refuge in tasting the fresh, tangy taste of a blackberry. We see that we are not limited, we are not caught by that thought. There's also something more. And when we practice like that, not getting caught by just our self-identity, eventually we touch that we are part of everything. That we're not separate from anything. And when we see this as the truth of who we are, that we are not limited just by this small self, we're not caught in just this small self, but we abide everywhere, then our deepest desire becomes to manifest that in all our actions. And the precepts are the expression of that. There's a very beautiful image that is given in the Hua Yan Sutra of the net of Indra. And the net of Indra is a vast web of all, everything. And at each point where the net, the web crosses, there's a very beautiful jewel. And that jewel is many faceted. And each facet reflects everything in the universe. And that is you. That is me. And whatever we do affects the entire web. And so if we are lost in our hatred, in our anger, in our fear, then that is what is manifest in the field of consciousness, in the net of all existence. And if we can come back to ourselves and know how to take refuge in the mind of awakening, in the teachings of peace, in the Sangha that lives and manifest love, peace, and solidity. Then we aren't caught by that small suffering of our self-identity, and we step into a much bigger reality. And in manifesting that, step by step, breath by breath, our whole life has changed, and the lives of everyone we touch. And the precepts are actualized. The awakened mind is manifest. So it's letting go of this attachment to our self-identity, our self-cherishing, and our self-hatred, that we are able to take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And in that place of refuge, we find our liberation, the transformation of suffering, and the true abiding in peace, ease, and joy. We practice this for ourselves and for the sake of all beings. Because whatever we do, the whole web is reflected. Up at Mountain Lamp, we have a very beautiful lake, and in those couple of weeks of sun we had this summer, I made a promise to myself that I would swim every day in the lake, and I almost did it, not quite, but... we have a lovely float out in the middle of the lake that John built during one of our retreats, and the whole Sangha gathered together to launch the float. I mean, it's a really big, huge float. And we towed it out with canoes out to the middle of the lake and anchored it, and it's there for those who come to Mountain Lamp to enjoy, so they can swim. Go swimming in the lake. Anyway, this time of year, because it's fall, there's all these dragonflies. I mean, there are so many dragonflies out on the lake. It's just amazing. And they fly really close to you, and sometimes they land right on you. And they're beautiful. You know, their wings are iridescent, and they have this incredible, indescribable metallic blue. And across the whole top of their heads, I've had some land on me and I've really looked at them closely recently, and across the whole top of their heads is their eyes. And their eyes have all these facets, and each facet sees, you know, so it's like hundreds and hundreds of eyes across the whole top of their head. If you look closely, you can see this on a dragonfly. And their eyes reflect everything. They see in all directions, and they reflect everything. And so is true of our lives, and so is true of our actions. And we take up the study of the five mindfulness trainings as a way to explore this whole wonderful reality of the field of consciousness that we're involved in, that we're part of, that we manifest in all our activities, in our thinking, and in our way of life. So I'm very happy to have this next 6 or 7 weeks, however long it is, to really dedicate ourselves to practicing and studying the precepts, the mindfulness trainings, and taking them inside ourselves, so they're not just something outside, a prescription that they are a living guide, a living light within, a living refuge for each of us.
a bell to stretch our legs.
I take refuge in hearing the children laugh outside. Wonderful.